Thank you. Yes, I would like to give a mathematical introduction to loop quantum gravity. So let me first decode some keywords. So loop quantum gravity is just an attempt to quantize gravity by using loops. That's why this is where the loop comes from. So what is actually quantized? So what is quantized is geometry of initial data. Think of initial data for gravitational field and intrinsic geometry. In our case, this geometry is going to be instead of intrinsic metric and extrinsic curvature, it will be orthonormal triad, which defines the intrinsic metric tensor and a certain tensor which is equivalent to the extrinsic curvature can be obtained from the extrinsic curvature by using this. So our aim is to quantize it, which means to replace it by operators. Well, operators would like to have some Hilbert space to be acting in. And then we call this, of course, this is not exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn some other objects, some other combinations of those fields. So take it as just vague way of expressing what I'm going to do. And so this is called quantum geometry. Once we have quantum geometry, then the usual geometric objects like the metric tensor, like everything what you can define by using the metric tensor, it becomes operator, and those operators act on some elements in Hilbert space. So now two ingredients are necessary to define some geometric objects: this operator which defines this geometric object and some element of Hilbert space.
Any natural model for the Hilbert space?
Sorry?
Is there any natural model for the Hilbert space?
Yes, there is a Hilbert space. Our aim is to be background independent. So we would like to implement this idea in a background independent way. So we don't want to use any fixed classical metric tensor here to define perturbations. We want to really take advantage only of given structure of manifold without any geometry. We are going to introduce Hilbert space, so it is quite specific. And next step is to impose the constraints. So in the case of the, so here I'm talking only about pure gravitational field. So in this case, these are just vacuum Einstein equations, the constraints following from the vacuum Einstein equations. We impose those constraints. Ideally, the constraints should be solved in this, should be also represented by operators, and they should be solved by finding appropriate by kernels of those operators in this Hilbert space. It turns out that such solutions are not really available, so we have to construct those solutions in a different way, and I will explain in detail what I mean. So since I don't want to say anything what is not true, I prefer to stop at this point and explain in detail later. So our aim is first to quantize geometry without imposing Einstein equations, the geometry of initial data, then explain in what sense we can quantize the constraints, and finally, what do we know about solutions. And I will do my best to do it in a background independent way. This is one of the important features of this approach, that we don't use any fixed background geometry on
So when you say solutions, do you mean solutions of the constraints, or you mean the evolution?
I mean solutions of the constraints.
So solutions as operators, or do you mean in terms of the Hilbert space?
No, solutions, by solutions we mean in terms of this, or in some other generalized meaning.
So those would be things that are annihilated by the Cs.
Right. Okay.
One last question. Does one ever get to the point of considering the evolution?
I'm not going to get to this point. There is an idea how to get to this point, but in order to implement this last step, we need to have a set of solutions. And to implement this point, we should really know something more about solutions. So we need some knowledge, some technical knowledge about these solutions, which we don't have. So for the time being, we have a lot of solutions which are not physical, at least most of them are not physical, and we need a criterion for selecting some smaller group, but physical, smaller group which are physical. So this is the end of the story.
I think the question is slightly different. Mm-hmm. So in quantum theory, if you solve the constraints, you also solve dynamics, which is very, very counterintuitive from the point of view of classical theory. And this is the story with this totally constrained systems. Just to give you one very small example is, if you consider a free particle in Minkowski space, then there's a constraint, which is exactly like this, which says the four momentum p mu plus mass squared is equal to zero. There's a constraint. If you impose it quantum mechanically, that means you are looking for wave functions psi of x and t, such which are killed by this constraint. But this constraint is exactly the Klein-Gordon equation, log minus m squared is equal to zero. So if you solve the constraints, then there is an interpretation of it, which emerges as time evolution.
I see. So this is the whole story, right?
This is the whole story. Like, that's the point that I want to make. And what Ulrich was saying is, we don't understand enough of the solutions in order to have this interpretation of what is time.
To understand this evolution by looking at them. And right. It is also possible that this evolution is not property of every solution, but that we have to find the right solutions. I also had in mind that those partial observables, which can be also used and implemented as operators. Okay, and another one more important technical feature of this framework is that instead of this data, we are going to use Young-Mills, certain Young-Mills variables, which are identical to the variables used in Young-Mills theory in the canonical 3+1 approach to the Young-Mills theory. So I will start with what I call quantization, background independent quantization of connection theory, and then we will go to the geometry. We will represent geometry by the connections, and we'll see how it works for geometry. So let us start with first point, background independent quantization of theories of connection. Okay, so I will not use fiber bundles. However, if anybody is familiar with principal fiber bundles, the generalization is quite straightforward. So it's not really essential difficulty. So let sigma be a manifold finite dimensional manifold. On sigma, I fix certain differentiability. For sigma, I assume certain differentiability class. If it was not a workshop of people working on differential equations, maybe I wouldn't mention that. But this differentiability class I call semi-analytic. So this is kind of piecewise analytic defined in a very careful way.
Be a bit more specific. What do you mean by that?
Sorry?
What do you mean by semi-analytic?
Well, so if sigma is Rn, then I mean that I first define semi-analytic functions by assuming they are analytic, of by assuming that I can that there is some partition of my space into semi-analytic sets, and function is analytic as restricted to every of these semi-analytic sets, and semi-analytic manifold is manifold which admits charts such that their transition maps are semi-analytic in the sense of this definition. So it is a carefully defined piecewise analyticity.
So the transition functions are continuous in particular, or?
No, they are differentiable and analytic on appropriately defined patches. I mean, arbitrarily.
Analytic dense set or?
Sorry?
Analytic on dense sets or?
No, yes, they are analytic. So it's not the definition, but it's a property that they are analytic on dense. Okay, now, so the first field which we consider, let me introduce, there will be a pair of fields, a connection and the conjugate momentum. So the connection is just a one form on sigma, which takes values in certain Lie group, which I should have listed. So the algebra, so G is a Lie group, compact, connected. However, it's connectedness may be probably relaxed, but I'm just not sure. This is the corresponding Lie algebra. And A is a one form which takes values in this Lie algebra. And you can think from physical point of view, it is may be considered as gauge potential. Okay, so now we will be considering a specific kind of functions. So to define those functions, first let me introduce the parallel transport. So for a curve in sigma. For some reasons, I will call the curves edges and denote them by E. So given any curve in sigma, we define the parallel transport corresponding to this connection. And I denote this just by this symbol. And it takes values in the Lie group. If somebody is not familiar with this notation, it can be defined alternatively by a differential equation along the curve with appropriate initial value at the beginning. And so those kind of parallel transports play a crucial role in all this framework, and they are used to define a cylindrical function. So psi, a function on the space of those connections, is called cylindrical if it can be written in terms of parallel transports with respect to some finite set of paths. So if it can be written as, and now I use some other function which is smaller, I will define what it is. Let me use this very definition. Okay. Okay, where E1, EK are just some paths. And small psi is a function. So every parallel transport takes value in the group. So psi should be a function defined on appropriate product of the groups.
So when you take that AE, that should we be thinking of that as a G-valued path, or is it? I'm just trying to think. I wonder how to think about that guy. The A sub E. So I know what a parallel transport along a given connection is, and what that path X. But are you just thinking about the endpoint, or are you thinking about its value along the path, or what?
Well, this integral means integral of a one form along a one-dimensional space of manifold, so it's well defined. So we integrate from this end up to the other end.
You are identifying it with G in some way. How do you do that?
Am I identifying what?
You're identifying the endpoint. You've got a frame at the beginning, which is your E, and then you've got a frame at the end, which you're saying lies in G, but you can only say that once you've actually specified a background frame.
Okay, so you are one of those fiber bundle people. So, okay, so from the point of view of bundles, you just think of two fibers, and given a connection everywhere, and given an edge here, you know very well how to define isomorphism, which maps one to define a map. Which maps this fiber into this fiber. So then this AE is this map, mapping this fiber into this fiber.
So it's not really a valued in G.
Right. Then it is. Then this is not.
Yeah, well, if you put element it, you put of it in a background frame, it's a trivial.
That's what you're saying, that you're not doing that. That's what was a little confusing. Yeah.
But if you are familiar with this framework, you can easily translate this into this language, and you can still have space.
Well, there is a difference. There is a difference in that you're actually imposing a background frame that you're measuring things with.
It's not
frame. Well, in this case, I still have the space of all possible maps between fibers, which are consistent with the action of the group. Yeah. And just instead of group G, I use this space, which has a lot of structures from this gauge group G. So it's not really a group, but there is a well-defined measure metric on this manifold. It's a manifold, etc. So it's easy to formulate it in
okay, but
way.
So then when you choose the psi of A, it looks like you're just saying it's a function of A, but it's a function of these E1 through EKs as well. So do you fix those, or is that, you fix that from the beginning, or how do you do that?
Okay, so if a function on this space of one forms with values in the algebra can be written in this form for a single fixed psi and single set of edges, and for every connection, then I consider this as a symmetric function. The symmetrical functions are used as so we think of those holonomy transports as replacement for A, meaning that we will never use directly A. We will always do our best to use the parallel transports and try to express everything by parallel transports. Therefore, this space of the symmetrical functions, this is SIL, is space of all the cylindrical functions. It plays the crucial role in this framework. This space is as a subspace of space of all the functions on connections, has a natural algebra structure. So this is algebra. actually C star star algebra with norm is just the soup norm. You can check that because the group is compact. In fact, this defines the norm. So together with norm, its completion is a C star algebra. And working with the C star algebra according to Gelfand's theory is equivalent to working with the set of all the continuous functions. Okay, here I'm assuming that those functions are smooth, but when we take completion, then it's equivalent to considering all the continuous functions on a certain space called Gelfand spectrum. So let's denote this space by a bar. And it was the idea of Ashtekar and Eichen to start to consider this space a bar instead of space of A's.
You said you have a star algebra, so there's got to be a way to multiply these things.
Just functions.
Just functions.
Just functions.
So.
And you know that you.
As a subalgebra of space of functions, it has all the.
You know the cylindrical after you multiply them.
Yes, because if I multiply two functions of this form with different size and ease, they again have the same. The result again has the same form. So.
Could you define carefully for us the definition of the product in the algebra?
It's just function, product of two functions. So the space of all the functions has natural algebra structure.
For example, the same set of edges, or
no?
Can you multiply two?
Okay, consider another function like this. Say phi equal to small phi a e prime one a e prime k prime. And then we have psi and phi equals, well, just product of those two. Just multiplication of phi. If I didn't tell you this definition, it would be obvious how to multiply functions. So
the product is again cylindrical, but with this.
And the product is again cylindrical. Yeah, yes.
So by cylindrical, you mean it's really valued in functionals on the set of the edges. Is that correct?
Yes, because now the new set of edges consists of all those edges used. So new set. So it again has a form psi tilde a e1 a e k a e1 prime a e k prime.
That psi small, psi tilde small.
This it again has this form. Right? Then now this psi tilde is product of those two, and now this new psi is defined on G first to K times to K prime. It's quite. Is it okay?
I'm just trying to piece it together. The E's, the set of possible edges, are the set of presumably Lipschitz curves. You have to have a tangent vector almost everywhere, otherwise you can't define the parallel transport, presumably.
So the weakest possible assumption one can make is that those edges are such that you can define the parallel transport, so that they are differentiable.
So you're putting a topology on the set of finite products of edges. Right? Your psi of A is a function by a cylindrical function, I mean it's a function on the set of edges. Product of the space of edges with its infinite finite product of agents.
Well, you may interpret it in some way which I don't understand, but or maybe it's okay. But
it's depends on the finite number of polynomials, not on the finite number of edges.
So a variable is this, and it just ranges a group.
So maybe it would help. Maybe it's just it would help to understand that little size. I don't know how small it has to be. Maybe I mean, is it just taking all those things and multiplying by the groups that so it's psi, a bunch of guys in there. So is it just multiplying those because you say it's C infinity on these group on the K product of the groups, right?
Or it can be any function. Each argument is a group element.
Oh, okay.
Therefore, the argument is just an element g1 up to gn, but g1 is a group element, namely a of e1.
Yeah. But Abai,
yeah.
Psi doesn't come with the collection e1 to ek, does it? It comes with the collection of all possible paths that you could do the parallel solve along.
It comes with collection.
So this is just a definition of a cylindrical function. So
you're saying
if psi can be written like this for some set of edges, then it is cylindrical.
Okay, for some bunch
yeah,
of
but does psi carry, when you write psi, do you mean psi with the collection of edges, or do you mean psi with the collection of all possible edges?
A specific psi would have a collection of edges.
So psi really has a subscript, E1 up to EK.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. So, since we decided to restrict ourselves only to functions of this form, this is one of axioms that everything, according to us, should be expressed by holonomy transports. So this is equivalent to considering to replacing this space of g-valued one-forms by the Gelfand spectrum. And it turns out that the Gelfand spectrum actually has a nice, it has, of course, the Gelfand definition, but it has also another characterization. It can be characterized, so every element of this Gelfand spectrum can be, in a natural way, understood as element of homomorphisms from the groupoid of the paths.
What does that mean?
In sigma to G. So it means that A bar maps every edge into certain element of G in such way that whenever we have composition of two paths, then the result is product of the values, and when we take inverse paths, so by inverse we mean with opposite orientation, then the value is inverse of this one. So by this we mean homomorphism. Okay, so it turns out that we just replaced our space of connections by space of generalized parallel transports in this sense. So maps which assign group elements to edges in this way, consistent with connecting edges and changing their orientation.
The groupoid structure only applies when you've got two edges which happen to have this one at the end point of one is the beginning point of the other. Is that correct?
Right.
How do you define it then if you've got two coming out of one point?
That is just not.
So it's possible compositions?
No, if edges are, if one of edge doesn't end at the beginning point of the other edge, then we have no condition.
Right, supposing you have two edges though,
mm-hmm.
starting at the ending point of one. So
okay.
You've got one coming in and two coming out.
By using this operation, I can switch orientation of one of the edges, and then I can apply this.
But you still have three coming into one point. one coming in and two coming out.
Sorry. So you mean what? You mean this case or?
Add one more.
One more?
Yes. I mean, that can certainly happen in your
Okay. So I have various possibilities I can do.
Pairwise is related.
This I can do this.
Whenever you can combine them. So you've essentially got, say, if you drew one of the arrows coming out instead of one going in, you would have two curves there joining up, which happen to coincide on part of their.
So this homomorphism is continuous in some cases?
This homomorphism is not assumed to be continuous, and John Barrett showed in his PhD that if this homomorphism is differentiable with respect to homotopies of those E's, then in fact a bar is a genuine connection.
How do you define the topology on the groupoid then? Define the topology on the groupoid by putting some sort of topology.
We're not defining topology on the groupoid. When I said differentiable, I meant with respect to homotopy, so to every homotopy. I think it's anyway, it's not subject of my talk, so I just mentioned that there is a condition on this A bar, using which we can check whether A bar is a regular A or whether this is one of those extra elements. Okay, so we have defined. So the conclusion of this point is that we, since we want to construct a theory which uses only parallel transports, in fact we replace our space of connections into this space of generalized connections. Okay. Now we
one
consider
more before you leave that. Hmm? Can you tell us what the star operator is? How do you define it?
Sorry?
How do you define the star operator?
Star is so once again I would like to explain something. Given a big algebra, okay, if I have a subset of this algebra and I show that this subset is preserved by all the operations in this big algebra, then I'm just assuming that all those operations in this subset are taken from this bigger. So here I have a big algebra of functions. Okay, star is complex conjugation, multiplication is multiplication, and SIL is a subset which is close with respect to multiplication and with respect to complex conjugation. So this is just a natural structure induced by the space of functions. So star is
there's complex valued functions.
Okay.
But it's
not very sophisticated.
You're saying that this space of functions is space of functions into the complex numbers, not.
Right. Okay. So this is a space of complex.
Just use an ordinary complex.
Okay. This is a space of complex valued functions. Okay. Good point. Sorry. Okay. So for the time being, we have the conclusion was this, that we replaced our space of connections by the Barth connections. Now, Yang-Mills theory is described by a pair of variables. So now I defined only the first from this pair, and now conjugate momentum is certain. Now it's more difficult to write what it is. This is a vector valued density, a tangent vector valued density. Or a tangent vector density taking values in this Lie algebra. Okay, so using some coordinates, local coordinates, we can view it as a vector field taking values, but we have to remember that this is a density. So in other sense, it means that for every one form. If I contract one form with P, it defines uniquely a object assigned measure which I can integrate along sigma, and it's a well-defined element of the algebra. So, so I mean this by the best. Okay, so physicists usually write this the Poisson bracket in the following way. So we choose some coordinates. We choose some coordinates here in sigma, and in Lie algebra we choose some basis. And then using this we decompose a connection into components. And this vector density is also decomposed into coefficients. And the following Poisson bracket is defined. And now our aim is to, again, replace. So what do we want to do? We have a phase space of functions of A's and P's, which is equipped with the Poisson bracket given by this relation. And our aim is to quantize this Poisson bracket, to turn A's and P's into operators. However, instead of A's, we choose parallel transports and those cylindrical functions as elementary variables which will be turned into operators. And instead of P's, we choose, again, we look at what the P's, what is a natural thing we can do with P. So if you are familiar with vector densities, then a well-defined geometric object is the flux of vector density. You don't need any extra measure to define the flux. You just need a codimension one surface. So we define fluxes. So given a co-dimension one submanifold, and since this P takes values in the algebra, we need some smearing function. So the smearing function is a compactly supported function on this S. We introduce the flux of this P, which can be written in the following way. So this is our PSF. So this is actually a function of P. It is defined by a fixed surface and a fixed smearing function on this surface. Okay, so the advantage of this choice is that there is a well-defined, but for every cylindrical function, so if psi is a cylindrical function, then this Poisson bracket is well defined. This is again element of the space of the cylindrical functions. So there is no more delta Dirac delta here. This delta is regularized by taking this integral. Okay, so we have defined. So now the conclusion is that we have defined our elementary variables, which are the holonomy transports, the parallel transports for all possible edges and fluxes where E are all possible edges. And so to be exact, they are a piecewise semi-analytic. And S are all semi-analytic dimension one submanifolds. Okay, this is the set of elementary variables. Now, from this, we next step is to define classical algebra. So the classical algebra consists of functions which we will want to turn into operators. And in this case, this I first need to introduce one more piece. So let pi. Okay. So I should say one more thing, that since this is element of SIL, actually, if we so this in this way, PSF defines a map from SIL to SIL, and we can check that this is a it's called derivative or differentiation?
Derivation.
Okay, so this is a derivation. It satisfies the Leibniz rule. That's why it's called derivation. Okay, if we commute two derivations, then we again have a derivation. So consider by so this is a you can think of this as a generalized vector field on A bar. So A bar is a strange space because on one hand it's compact due to Gelfand, on the other hand the Gelfand topology. On the other hand, it's infinite dimensional, in the sense it's not finite dimensional. And so we don't really know what are vector fields on A bar. However, given the, so we choose the algebraic approach, given some algebra of functions which is distinguished by our construction, we now distinguish some set of derivations and consider those derivations as generalized vector fields. And those generalized vector fields is a smallest Lie algebra containing all the flux operators, and I call it so P is this. Okay, so now we define our we use this analogy with finite dimensional manifold. So you can think of SIL as functions on finite dimensional manifold, fluxes and elements of this algebra as vector fields. And now given this structure, there is a naturally defined Lie algebra. One Lie algebra is Lie algebra of those vector fields, but there is another Lie algebra. Namely, we can take product and equip, so this is a vector space, and equip this product with, or let me call it classical bracket, which is given by the Poisson bracket, where by definition psi and an element of this, let me call it pi, the commutator, the product between two of those is given by what is at our disposal. So it's prime and real commutator as commutator of derivations of this. Okay, so this is our classically algebra. Now, I don't have time to tell you how, but given a Lie algebra, there is a quite natural notion of enveloping quantum algebra. It's defined in the same way as enveloping algebra, but just by adding, replacing commutator by I times commutator, replacing classical commutator. So by using this, from this we construct, from this we given, so from let us call this a classical, from a classical we construct naturally a quantum star algebra. So this is a related star algebra, which is constructed by, from this, by more or less by taking.
You haven't defined these as quantum operators yet, have you?
Hmm.
Talking about this as an algebra on the quantum operators.
So this is an abstract algebra. In a sense, it's defined in a constructive way. However, these are not operators; just certain star algebra. So it's defined just as infinite sum of tensor products of complexification of this algebra.
Why do we want this?
Divided by basically this relation, which is telling us that.
That's what we do when you do ordinary quantum mechanics, right? And what you do is you want an abstract algebra of, say, for example, position operators and momentum operators.
Yeah.
These are not concrete operators on Hilbert space. It's just abstract.
Well, this is avoiding, you don't define the Hilbert space first.
Right, so then you look for the representations of this abstract algebra.
So you're promoting these to quantum operators by getting this algebra.
Right, and now there is, now quantization means finding representation for this algebra in some Hilbert space, okay? And since we promised ourselves to be background independent, our representation shouldn't be using any extra structure which was not used here. So it should be covariant with respect to diffeomorphism.
It's useful to know how to do that.
Hmm?
To understand the rest of what you're going to talk about, is it useful to know how to go from the algebra we had to this thing?
Okay, so physicists do this instinctively, by putting heads and saying, okay, we have algebra, but we have to remember that whenever we switched order, then it has to be the same as element corresponding to the Poisson bracket of those guys times this, and then with hat. For a long time, I didn't understand what they meant. I thought they were cheating, but finally, I introduced myself such a construction, and Abai told me that this is exactly what everybody has been doing.
So
there is a way. But it's just what physicists always do. Okay, so now the statement now how to construct representation of this algebra. So to construct this representation, nicest kind of representations, representations which are most difficult to find, are GNS representations given by a positive linear functional on this algebra, which is positive in this sense. And we have such functional. It is called GNS state, and we even know that there is unique functional which satisfies our diffeomorphism invariance condition.
Rich Goffman, GNS?
Gelfand, Neumark.
Do you have any guarantee that the universal element is non-trivial?
Yes, so we have guarantee. I can tell you what it looks like. So
the formulas are there, but how do you know that there is a non-trivial representation?
Yeah, so I can show you how the representation is looking. To be specific, completely. Okay, so
use another board.
Okay, so as I told you, as I convinced you, working with the cylindrical functions amounts to working on certain generalized space of generalized connections, and all the functions defined on this space. This is a compact space, and in fact, this space admits a lot of measures, and in particular, it admits one particularly natural measure, which is diffeomorphism invariant. So there exists a measure.
Would be a good thing if you could tell us exactly what the space A bar is.
On A bar.
Okay, so this, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Space A bar is a space of all homomorphisms. And I wrote down before. So it's a space.
Yeah.
You had a previous ball, or did you just?
I just erased it.
Unfortunately, you just rubbed it out.
I was so smart.
I was going to rub it more.
I can use it. So A bar, every element of A bar associates with an edge, a group element, or actually mapping from fiber to fiber. Let's just say group element. Okay.
Yeah.
Such that if I compose edges in the physical space, then the group elements compose in the group.
Yeah.
And if I reverse the orientation, then I take the inverse of the group element. That's the only condition.
Okay. Could I just say what I'm trying to get to is where that comes from the Gelfand-Neimark construction? As I recall, what you do with your C-star algebra is you go looking for the principal ideals.
So what we're doing is combination of Gelfand-Neumark and this example. So
how does that tie in with what you're saying that it's an edge?
So that I think is a.
So you need to prove it.
Maybe we should discuss this after the talk because that is a.
Well, it seems critical.
Longer discussion. So at the moment, you just have to accept that Gelfand spectrum is the space of homomorphisms. And
so it's the space of homomorphisms along an edge element. Sorry, maybe I wasn't listening carefully when you explained. A bar is the space of edges and homomorphisms along edges? Or
is
along the edge? Or?
A bar, given this A bar is space of homomorphisms from the groupoid of edges into the Lie group.
Okay, so on a sequence of group elements, G1 to G10, you will get the product of those as being what gets returned?
So each element of A bar, maybe let's talk about elements of A bar.
Yeah.
So each element of A bar of that space is a generalized connection, right? So what did the connection do? Connection gave us Polonna.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So now each element of A bar, instead of having actually a path order integral, it just associates with each edge, a group element, such that those two properties hold.
Right. Okay.
So it's a much more general map than the holonomy map. That's what each element of A bar does.
Yeah.
Okay, so it turns out that there exists. So now I stated existence of some state, but diffeomorphism invariant and uniqueness. And now I would like to tell you how can you look at this state in another way. So I'm in fact constructing this state for you. So there exists a measure on this A bar. There exists many measures. This is a compact space. And there exists a particular measure, which is diffeomorphism invariant. And this measure is defined in the following way. So to define a measure, it's enough to define the integral. So take a function given by this, and let me erase the primes, and assume that those edges actually don't overlap. They can only intersect at the ends or not intersect at all. So suppose this is the case, then this is just the Haar integral of this small function. So, and it turns out that there is a unique measure which satisfies this property, which I just measure such. Okay, so I'm convincing you that there is trying to convince you that there is exactly one measure which satisfies this property, and as the Hilbert space, we choose L square with this measure. Okay. Now the representation of the algebra, defining a representation amounts to defining the action of elements of this algebra as operators. So the action of elements of corresponding to, so for every element corresponding to a cylindrical function, this action is defined just as multiplication. And for every flux, a generalized vector field, first I find the corresponding element in this star algebra, and then the representation on the cylindrical function is just this, where this means this Poisson, the same Poisson bracket, which was used before, but for a minute, I because I was talking about the algebras, I started denoting this by classical commutator. Okay, so this is the definition, and the state, and now we actually don't need the state, because what we really wanted, we want the representation. So once we have this representation, we are happy, and this representation is given by this, defines a state which I claim is.
So if you had some complicated function of these guys, you know, so you're writing what happens if you have a cylindrical element, and I mean, what if you have a general element of the algebra? Is it easy to see what it does or not?
So a general element of the algebra is just given by products of those elements. So after commuting, we can always write these products. So general element will be just product, will be some cylindrical function times product of those. Am I answering your question, or?
Well, I'm just trying to see where in this business, I mean, there's this old factor ordering problem that you have when you do the, does that disappear?
Yes. I mean, here we don't have factor ordering problem for the time being, unless we want to, so factor ordering problem appears when we take some classical function, and then we are trying to identify it first with some element of the star algebra, and then with operator. Then there's ambiguity. But
maybe the factor ordering problem comes when you specify what the Q's and P's are, and then you have a complicated function of them, like the constraints might be, and then you don't know what to do with it. But you're saying here,
and then I guess
here this representation. It's
yes,
obvious. So here, I mean, he's not one. So the statement is here: an element of the algebra is just like Q hat to the n. In your example, Q hat to the n, P hat to the n, times Q hat to the k.
Right.
So somebody gives you this element. So there's no factor ordering. I mean, somebody gave you the element in this particular factor ordering. That operates on psi, and these are, you know how to P operate on psi, Q operate on psi.
Okay, and so when you take the constraints, you're going to have an ordering built into it, in a sense?
So that's a separate problem. But given a classical function, how do you come to this hat operators? That is not solved. He's just telling you, given this hat operators, how they operate.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
John has a question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Since there are lots of questions, you can go on another 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
I missed something. Did you specify a particular state?
I just made existence statement and uniqueness statement, but didn't define the state. And however, I defined the algebra, the representation here. Here I defined the representation, which actually is defined by this state. So using this representation, you can find what I meant by this state.
What's the vacuum vector?
What's what?
The vacuum vector.
Well, this is unital C-star algebra, so one.
Is
the vacuum. So there exists vacuum here, which is normalizable and diffeomorphism invariant. Okay, so this concludes this Young-Mills part. So in this way, we treat the variables typical for the Young-Mills theory. So the gauge potentials and conjugate kind of generalized electric fields. And now and we are able to turn them into some operators which are defined in our Hilbert space. Everything is explicitly defined. Maybe I just missed some details. However, actually the information I gave here is sufficient to reconstruct this representation. However, I didn't explain what it had to do with the geometry of the initial data, which we would like to quantize. So the second step is relation between those A's and P's, which I defined here, and the initial data. By initial data, I mean some orthonormal frame and the extrinsic curvature. So the relation is defined in terms of the Ashtekar, so-called Ashtekar variables. So it will have a little implicit form, however, okay, so there is a certain parameter gamma here, which cannot be zero, and this parameter is fixed at this point, and the transformation is so I'm defining for you orthonormal frame, and this orthonormal frame is related with the intrinsic metric tensor, okay, and the relation, so it defines the metric tensor, and the relation between P and this frame. So this frame is almost the same as P. However, P was a density, and vector field is not a density, so we need some factor, and this factor is square root of determinant of Q. So from this we can calculate E by solving this
take
equation.
The determinant of E itself?
Hmm?
Take the determinant of E and avoid the square root?
Yes. Yes. It's true. But for some reasons, because E can have it's the same. And and the second relation is between A. So part of A is just the Levi-Civita connection of E. However, we add. So now I'm talking about Lorentzian gravity. Or should I also? Okay. So this is the definition of A. So this is the Levi-Civita connection which we can calculate from E, and this is this new piece of data which is calculated from A. And now from K, we can by using this frame and its dual we can calculate the extrinsic.
Why do you need the gammas running around?
I'm not saying that we need this gamma, but whatever gamma we put, we have such transformation, and it turns out that actually the properties, there are several properties which depend on this gamma. So especially after quantization, the representations are non-equivalent. Representations corresponding to different gammas are representations of those geometric structures are not equivalent.
So it's essentially rescaling your normal vector in a time-like direction.
Okay. Now, let us fix some amount of time in which I have to stop, because depending on this, I can tell
maybe
you.
Maybe we just stop the formal thing at
So either
5:15,
10 seconds or 10 minutes or 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Okay. How much more stuff do you have? How much more stuff do you have to tell us?
Okay, so I have completed the first step. Now we have. I will list what we do next. Okay, so now our our strategy is the following: given any geometric object. Given any function f, which is expressed by triads and expressed by extrinsic curvature, first write it in terms of A's and P's that you can easily do. However, it's not enough because we in fact turned into operators, not A's and P's themselves, but holonomitron, but only cylindrical functions and fluxes. So not every function of A and P can be written as flux and or holonomy. However, we can always, or at least in large class of cases, we can, given F, we can construct a different F, which is function of, actually I need more space, which is function of some holonomies and fluxes. Here I write only one copy of flux and holonomy, but in fact there are many of them, say N, and of Poisson brackets. So I mean that I use that this is certain analytic formula which involves this and Poisson brackets possibly, and such that it depends on some number n, and when this n goes to infinity, we have this pointwise limit. And now we know what to do. We just replace A's and P's by operators. So then next step is define this F and here replace by operators and replace the Poisson bracket by commutators. And now try to give meaning to this limit when n goes to infinity. And if this limit exists, then promote this limit to the quantized this quality, to the quantum operator corresponding to this original. This is by definition, this right-hand side is the quantum operator corresponding to this. However, it's not enough to just do it in any possible way, because this operator at the end has to be defined in a diffeomorphism invariant way, so it can depend on any extra graph or curve or coordinates used, and this is the most difficult part. And also certain identities still have to, there should be some consistency between Poisson brackets and commutators. Okay, so in this way we accomplish quantization of geometry. So in this way,
that limit may or may not exist.
And this limit in our case typically exists after we apply this corresponding operator to some vector. So this is this kind of limit. So this is not limit in some norm, but this is a limit after we apply this operator to a vector. And in this way, we quantize length, area of any S, the volume of any region R. Okay. So in this way, the quantization of geometry of the initial data was accomplished. And next steps are representing the constraints by operators and trying to understand the equations, quantum version of Einstein equations in terms of quantum constraints and elements of this Hilbert space. And this is going to be illustrated in quite an exhaustive way, I think, in homogeneous case, when we can actually calculate everything from the beginning to the end and see the results. So instead of this general definitions which and results which I was not able to present today, you will see at least how it works in case of examples, and then it's much clearer what is the result. So maybe it's pedagogical point of view, it may be better. Thank you.